Big Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
In his 2005 book, The Long Emergency, author James Howard Kunstler describes a future in which suburbia meets what he calls a tragic destiny. There's a story in the paper this week that describes some of the details of this destiny. First, let's hear a little more from Kunstler on suburbia's future. The whole system, he says, will not operate without liberal and reliable supplies of cheap oil and natural gas. Suburbia is going to lose its value catastrophically as it loses its utility. People who made bad choices and invested the bulk of their life savings in high-priced suburban houses will be in trouble. They will be stuck with houses in unfavorable locations, surrounded by similar dysfunctional artifacts of sprawl, and if they are lucky enough to sell them at all, they will only create an identical set of tragic problems for some greater fool of a buyer. Even fantastic bargains will end up being no bargain. By suburbia, Kunstler means vast areas of single-family homes, surrounded by yards, in neighborhoods where jobs and shops are far away. Many areas that are technically part of the central city are this kind of suburbia. As in Detroit, where the current wave of foreclosures is having the most devastating effect on existing neighborhoods. There, according to an Associated Press article, for sale signs offer at least 1,800 homes for under $10,000 that once were worth at least 10 times more. With homes there sometimes on sale for a dollar, overseas investors are swooping in and buying homes by the dozen and by the gross. The change from owner-occupied homes to renters has changed the feel of the neighborhoods. The article quotes Novella Willis, who has nearly paid off the mortgage on her home, as saying, "A couple of houses across the street, they are in-and-out renters. They don't stay long, maybe 3 or 4 months. The renters rarely cut the grass, rarely do the snow. You don't see the owners until people leave the house." It also sounds like the city has lost control of how the homes are used. Landlords are required to contact the city before renting a property, but planning director Douglas Diggs guesses that fewer than 1 in 6 of the new landlords actually does that. Are the purchasers of these foreclosed homes vultures, picking at the carcasses of working people's financial failures? Or are they saviors, fixing up abandoned homes and renting them out, keeping life in what would otherwise be abandoned and soon crumbling buildings? And what's going to happen to the new landlord's investment? At least one landlord quoted expects rents to just pay taxes and maintenance. Any profits will come from increased real estate prices down the line, if that happens. Another described the economics of being able to charge nearly $1,000 a month, a number that seems surprisingly high to me, for a house that cost only $20,000. Even with taxes and maintenance, that could work out to recouping the initial investment in 3 to 4 years. The fate of Detroit's remaining owner-occupied neighborhoods and the new mega-landlords is tied to federal energy policy. The slump is greatest in Detroit because that's where the local economy was fueled by poorly managed auto companies that gambled and lost billions at oil prices would remain low, and people would keep buying SUVs. Now the companies are worthless or nearly so, kept alive by an intravenous drip of taxpayer money, and the same managers who created these failures are largely still at the helm. Even if Bush and Obama's decabillion-dollar subsidies continue, I haven't seen a realistic plan for the car companies to turn around. If people start buying cars at a faster pace for a while and driving more, that's likely to push oil prices up to where they were last summer and beyond, triggering another slump in car sales. At this point, it would cost the U.S. taxpayer less to buy the car companies for the few billion dollars the stock market says they're worth than to continue giving them money. With our country owning the companies, we could jettison the current executives and bring in people who know how to transform most of the factories into builders of wind turbines, solar panels, small-scale hydro, rail cars, buses, trolleys, and other things that will meet Barack Obama's goals of generating green jobs, reducing dependence on foreign oil, and lowering carbon emissions. And the government could place orders for many of these items and set up incentives and regulations to stimulate sales of others. With these actions, Detroit's decline could turn around. For a while. At some point, the problem will return of how suburbia will function when the cheap oil that made it possible is gone for good. Until then, cities around the nation can learn from Detroit's example and start to wrestle now with how to handle a suburbia increasingly dotted with foreclosures. I'm Carl Etnayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.
There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.